Hey, welcome to the Meat House. Jeff here with my buddy Chris.
Hey, how you doing, Jeff?
I am doing pretty good. How are you?
Oh, man. Good day.
Yeah, you know, any day where you get to chat, hang out, drink some meat, and have a good time is a fantastic day.
It's a good day. And I got the chance to sit with your chickens for a little bit. I can see how you like that, sitting with the chickens thing.
Yeah, no, they're just, they're chill, they're curious, they're fun.
And the coo sounds they make are just so soothing. I mean, yeah, I appreciate that. That was good.
The funny thing is, like, I've hung out with them enough that I recognize each of their voices individually now. It's like, if I hear one of them, like, boop, 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 oh, well, Kelda found a something or other.
Well, I don't think I'll get to them that well. But anyway.
They're fun. They're great fun. Hey, it is the Meat House. We need to start by thanking our listeners. You guys, we appreciate so much the feedback, the support, just you guys tuning in and listening week after week and letting us know that, hey, what we're doing is appreciated. Again, keep sending it our way. info@themeathouse.com. Find us on Facebook at The Meat House. We are trying to get onto more and more of these, the feeds for various podcast services. It's a time-consuming endeavor. And
I'm apparently really bad at it. I keep trying, but I just... all thumbs for computers.
Hopefully we've got some headway made, but I mean, we're working on that. We'll keep you updated. The other group, of course, we need to thank is Box of Barley
Corn. Yeah. Jake and his friends out there, coworkers, great guys. Love to help you out. Very passionate about their work.
They've got the ingredients. They've got the equipment. They've got the know-how to get it done. You guys, you know, by now listening to us for as long as you have that you can reach out to them for any of your homebrew related needs. They have probably what you're looking for, whether it's, you know, something basic like beer or something really obscure like kombucha.
Yeah.
Whatever.
And yogurt and cheese. I mean, if it's fermented, they probably got it.
Yeah. At one point in time, I'm pretty sure they had koji for making like sake or what's the stuff?
Sujo?
For soup, miso.
Miso.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
All kinds of weird stuff. And, you know, I don't think they have it in stock now, but I'm pretty sure you could still get it if there's an interest.
If you ask nice, you never know.
Yeah. Never hurts to ask.
But
and, hey, as long as you're asking, also, don't forget to use our promo code
MHP10.
Hey, we just got it this time. For 10% off of your purchases. It lets them know that you're listening, that you're appreciating what they're doing, and they're sponsoring the show and helping us get the information to you. So everybody wins here, guys.
Yeah, it's a great thing.
So, all right. Today's topic, today we wanted to talk about, and this is a little bit of a weird one, but this is going to be a fun one, though, I think.
Yeah.
We're talking about fortifying wines.
Fortifying meats. I saw, in my research, I came across a video of some people who were making a 30% mead. They used fortification to do it. And I'm sitting here, and a whole bunch of things went through my head right there.
Sure.
Why?
Okay.
My first thought was, why would you do that to yourself? I mean, I'm pushing when I'm getting my 18.
Yeah.
And that's hardcore push there.
I don't even try for 18 most days. You know me, I'm happy in the 8 to 12 range usually.
When I first started, I was going, how alcoholic can I make this thing? And 18 was it.
Hey, before we deep dive, you know what else we need to do?
Huh.
We need to talk about meat of the day.
Meat of the day it is.
Meat of the day. This is the other commemorative mead from the Valkyrie's Horn this year. This one is by Kyle Ducharme, and this is a chocolate cherry Moimbo. It is a 10% ABV, and this is...
dark.
Yeah, it's a dark red brown kind of, that looks like chocolates and cherries.
If you look real close, you can see your finger at the other side of the glass. It is that dark.
Mm-hmm. It is opaque. And so
it's a dark red brown chocolate cherry. But
mm-hmm. A little bit of leg.
I got...
oh, chocolate is nice on the nose.
Way up there, yeah. And cherry is not a subtle undertone. You can see it, the cherry is propping up the chocolate.
Yeah.
Is the best way I can describe that smell.
The cherry is there. You can get it, but...
ooh, that's a smooth meat.
Yeah. It's got a nice... there's a nice acid bite, like, right in the hard palate. Like, not tip of your tongue. Not the soft palate. But it comes in, like...
right behind the teeth.
Mm-hmm.
Right behind the teeth. That's where I got mine. And it's good. It's smooth. Nice balance.
Yeah.
The tannin is... the tannin sit in the back of the tongue and the back of the throat.
And the tannin is very chocolatey in nature, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It is... it lingers there even after the cherry is gone. It's got that kind of tart cherry across the tongue, and then the chocolate is, it kind of picks up and stays with you as you're, you know, you take a swallow, you breathe out, chocolate.
Yeah.
For sure.
Nice job, Kyle. I mean, Appreciate the commemorative there. That's good.
Very smooth, very oh yeah. So let's get into the nitty-gritty on the fortified meats.
Okay, now I spent the last week looking over fortified mead stuff. Fortified mead is basically you take your mead and you're fortifying it with something spirit-wise,
Right.
the hard alcohols. Generally, you use brandy or rum if you want a flavor with it, a sweeter or brandy flavor.
Right.
And if you want a neutral, you're going to use vodka or grain alcohol.
Sure.
And even as much as Everclear is in use to bump it up a little bit more. If they, for example, they got up to 29. They wanted to go 30, and what they got to 29.1. They used Everclear to bump it over the top.
You need a little more. I can see that. Sure.
So and that and but it, they got to 30.31 or something, or just some. And they said and but they all but the one they started off was with a whiskey.
Okay.
A brandy or whiskey. And they said it just added a nice complexity flavor to it when they finally tried it.
Sure,
This is
sure.
before they aged it. And they went through the entire process of making the mead, then fortifying after that. But generally what you're doing when you're fortifying mead, you're going to take, it's a lot of math. Not hard math, but it's a lot of math. And you can get the, if you want to just plug numbers, there's calculators online
Yeah,
for finding your ABV of just mead and for this too.
The same way we can find like a calculator for, final alcohol based on start of gravity, finish gravity.
Yeah,
Yeah,
and that's
exactly.
where you're going to start. Now, to do the final math, if you want to choose a number like they did, they said they want to do a 30, and that's where they went for it and got it. You can do that. But if you want to, if you're going to put it together and you got the taste you want, if you want to find out how much your alcohol is now, you're simply going to take the volume of mead, however many ounces, quarts, gallons, liters, milliliters, just keep the measurements consistent,
Sure. Yeah, naturally.
and of how much mead you have, how many ounces of mead times how much your ABV is for the mead. Plus the spirit, the how much volume in ounces of spirit you have, or whatever your measurement is, and the ABV of that spirit, like if it's a brandy or a rum, it's around 40%. And then you're going to divide that by the volume of mead and the volume of spirit. So it's, and you just plug in numbers and you're going to get your total AB for that.
Okay. Yeah, that seems straightforward enough to
It's
me.
very straightforward. It's not hard, it's just you got to plug numbers.
This is high school math, and it's been a minute since we've done complicated high school math with like the little brackets and stuff, but
Yeah,
it's
but
easy enough.
it's easy enough. But the only reason you're going to use, like, if you use a rum, you're going for a sweeter,
Sure.
that kind of sweet. Or if you're using a brandy, you want the brandy or whiskey flavors with it.
Right. We're talking about like that sweet wine-ish flavor in the case of brandy, kind of the smoky flavor in the case of whiskey. I follow the
Yeah, and
layout.
that's what you're going for. Otherwise, you're just adding for alcohol content. I don't know why you do that, but that's the goal.
Sometimes you just it takes a lot of effort to drink an entire 12 ounce of mead and not get drunk.
Get another one. Won't be. That's not like hard. Now, here's where it gets kind of sticky. If you're going to competitions,
Yeah.
when is a fortified mead no longer a mead, but a fortified wine? But you, where a spirit has taken over. And honestly, for all the research I did over the last couple of weeks, or last week, I should, last few days, couple of days, it depends on the competition.
It seems like this is a fuzzy line,
Is
yeah.
a very fuzzy, and these would be experimentals, no matter what you do.
Well, yeah, unless you are straight up like you have a very neutral alcohol spirit and you're bumping from 8 to 10% to the point where you just want to get into the standard range, but everything else is going to stay the same, then almost guaranteed you're ending up in that experimental category because the mead that tastes like rum is not a category anywhere else.
No, it's,
In the BJCP, yeah.
but and here's the other part of that is not only is it not fortifying a mead is, if in my opinion, should be done for a flavor in mind, a flavor improvement in mind,
Makes sense, yeah.
and you simply can't get every flavor you want easily without a fortification is the most common reason. Most competitions will allow a 10 to 20% by ounce measurement volume of spirit with your mead, and still call it a mead.
Okay.
And still call it a mead. After that, you better ask somebody.
Sure.
And we actually had one that was used that bourbon washed duck fat
Yeah.
that we had at the Valkyrie. It was fantastic.
Yeah. Well, and obviously the spirit involved in there is bourbon,
Yeah.
so makes sense.
And but it was very good. But he I but he was still around a 12%. So he didn't bump it up much. He got
Right.
a flavor more than a bump.
Yeah, it was a flavor, not an alcohol content kind of fortification.
When after you ferment your mead, what you're going to do after that is you're going to measure your volume and your ABV of your mead. You're going to choose whatever alcohol spirit you're going to get for whatever flavor you're going to get. And this is one of the things where the art comes in. Make a large batch of meat and piece it out into smaller batches and do some experimenting. This is what I've been doing here. Then you're going to get whatever alcohol, fortified alcohol you want, the brandy, rum, vodka, whatever, and measure the amount. And you mix and stir very slowly, evenly, and you let it sit at least overnight.
Makes sense.
So you can have those flavors go all together. Then you have all your numbers, you calculate what it is, and you write it down. Make sure you write everything down, guys. We're going to say this again and again and again.
Take notes, take good notes.
Because once you forget to write something down, you're done. You might as well just stop. You may get a great flavor, you may get a bad flavor, but you're never going to know how to get there again, one way or the other.
You're gonna kick yourself the entire time.
You'll kick yourself the entire time. Now, like I said, there are calculators online that you can just plug numbers in, they'll give you the answer. That's all good. A fortified mead is an odd thing, and it goes along, and this is something that Jeff asked me to look up, is port wines.
Because the whole process, if I give a very shorthand understanding of how port is made, you take the first batch of wine, you basically distill that into a high ABV product, and then you start a new batch. And very early in the maturity of that new batch, like within a few days when it's still a very young but fermenting wine, you add that high ABV spirit to halt fermentation, and the resulting thing after maybe after some maturation in a cask or other product is bottled and sold as port.
That's actually everything you said was right. Now, port is like champagne. Champagne can only be made in Champagne, France. Port is only port by label if it's made in Douro Valley, northern Portugal. So it's an elevated area near a river,
Okay.
and they grow. They generally it's done with four types of grape: the Touruga Nacional, Touruga Franca, the Tinta Roriz, the Tinta Barroca, and that's the only grapes they will generally use for that. Now, what he said about they make a product called Aguardiente. It's Spanish.
We're reading off of a page. Aguardiente, I think.
Aguardiente. And that is the high spirit proof they talk about. This sucker is made from cane sugar or fruit or both at to 77% alcohol. Now, traditionally, they take the grapes in whatever quantity, whatever they want, and they stomp the crap out of them traditionally. Until you get your pulp and juice, and then they start fermenting it, but only for 2 days. It barely starts. It barely has any time at all. But that they do that for the purpose of they want to keep the sweetness and the flavor of the fruit. But then they're going to dump an amount of, don't know the amount, of the 77% alcohol of the cane sugar into that to kill the yeast in what you're fermenting now and stop the process. What they aim for is 19 to 20% alcohol.
So the idea is you're adding a high proof spirit to a fairly young fermentation so that you get both the alcohol content and the fresh fruit flavor.
Exactly. That's what the port is.
That makes sense to me.
And after they do that, they and the lagars, the big vats they use to stomp things in. Some places are mechanical, most places are still traditional.
Nice.
Stomped, and they after that they'll put them in large wooden barrels, casks. To kill the yeast and to burn and to age from there, and but good chunk of them are still just exactly what was done 100, 200, whatever number of years ago. So yeah, I thought that was a really cool part too. But the primary fortification is only 2 days long. I mean, in my fermentation experience,
Primary fermentation.
in primary fermentation experience,
Yes, primary fermentation is only 2 days long. You said primary fortification.
I'm sorry. Shit, this is good mead. Okay. This is good mead. Anyway, the primary fermentation is only 2 days long. Now, I don't, from my experience, it takes my mead, my process, when I'm first doing my fermentation, about 12 hours to really get going
If that,
on the low end.
12 hours is, it can take up to two generally for me.
But so if you're, I don't know what yeast or whatever they use, didn't look that far into it, but they're barely getting any kind of yeast action at all.
Wow, okay.
So, and I don't know the big difference between what they're doing or a fruit juice with the alcohol, 77% alcohol,
So,
but there is.
and this may not be a question you have the answer to. Are they introducing a lab grown yeast, or are they using the yeast on the wine skin?
I do not know.
Okay, because.
The impression I got from what I read is they add a yeast,
Okay.
but that's I do I have no clarification of that whatsoever. But they'll put them in wooden barrels from there, or even the more models use concrete, steel, or even stainless steel, or even concrete vats to hold in after that.
Okay.
And then they'll let it age for X amount of time, right like that. And then they'll get up to four to five different kinds of port. They'll get the Ruby port, which is among one of the two lowest aging processes, 2 to 3 years
Sure.
each. The other one would be the vintage port. The Ruby port is, of course, red. It's a youthful, pretty character, is how they describe it. The vintage port is from a single harvest. They do not blend this one to get the consistent flavor. But it's only aged 2 to 3 years, and then it's bottled. But they say it does age in the bottle as it's going along.
Okay.
The late bottled vintage port is aged for 4 to 6 years before bottling. It's smooth and ready to drink without additional aging. Then they have what's called the tawny port, which is aged sometimes for decades. And it gets its name from the color. It's
Right.
a light brown color.
Yes. And I think it's been a while since I've had either kind of port. I remember, I think, liking the Ruby port more than the Tawny port, but this is very much a personal taste kind of situation, I believe. Sure.
Now, and but the vintage ports are never blended. Most of the others are blended to have a consistent flavor year after year, and they have special people to do that.
Sure.
But the vintage ports, whatever the unique characters of that season, that's what you got. And the only other one I could find after that was a white port made with white grapes.
Okay.
Sweet, it can be sweet or dry. 2 to 4 years aging, done.
Right.
But that's port, and but you can see the similarity between the fortifying a mead and this.
Yeah. And it will, I know there's like a local winery up north of here that does a port style wine. And we really enjoyed that. I think it was kind of in the idea of a Ruby port because it was fairly young, fairly fruity and red. But this has it's not high on my list. It's kind of just because I know there's going to be some fiddliness with it. But the idea of making a port style mead has kind of been kicking around in the back of my head as far as how I would do that. I mean,
Well, there
it
we go.
sounds like the basic approach to this is figure out what we need to do to end up with enough of the 77% high ABV product, whether that's two or three batches of mead to get to whatever we need to mix with a very young mead, and we can have a port-ish, a mead in the style of a port. I mean, and here's the fun thing, like we talked before about how mead is, it's not burdened by the history of this, that, or the other. We don't have a word for distilled mead or fortified mead.
No, we don't.
And
It's a phrase, not a word.
right, yeah, it's a concept. It's a concept that a few that I know of have even attempted. I've had a couple commercial varieties of distilled mead that I found were nice, but I think they the guy from it was, I want to say 3 years back at Valkyrie's Horn. I know I saw him there this year. I cannot remember the name of his winery offhand, but he was referring to this distilled mead as an eau de vie or an eau de vie,
Really, I
which
hadn't heard
is
the term.
it's a generic kind of a term for, to my knowledge, a like just a fruit schnapps kind of a distilled thing, not a specific to honey thing. So not a highly used term, but still, we don't have that vocabulary. And
No.
so it's kind of, this is an interesting other angle of like, this isn't even like, we're adding honey and water and yeast to a bucket and maybe some fruit or spice. This is, we're doing all kinds of other weird stuff.
Yeah, I
So.
mean, and if even the last few episodes we've been in the last few weeks we've been recording this, we said there are no rules.
No.
This is just a whole new category of no rules here.
Right. And, I was wrong before when I said that Missouri is the only state in the nation that is that has decriminalized distilling at home. There are a few others now. I think Maine and I want to say either Oklahoma or Ohio. I can't remember which. Obviously, I'm not a legal scholar, so don't take the fact that I said this as a good reason to go get yourself a still and start distilling in your garage. But we are recording in a state where it is decriminalized. It occurs to me that, we could definitely, this is something that is an achievable try, even if we need to do a little bit of legwork to get this going.
I actually have in storage a still, if you want to try that. I own one. Be glad to bring it over and see what we can do.
So do I.
Well.
The Anvil Foundry that we used last time,
Oh, that.
I have a column that attaches
Okay,
to it.
cool. But yeah, it's something we can do. But I like the concept because I never would have thought of a barely started fruit juice or fruit pulp mix being made a wine like that. Now, this does can call it, require some aging. You have to age it after that.
Sure.
But nonetheless.
And you know, now that I'm thinking about this, though, this also occurs to me that there are other possibilities here that we could explore. We have talked on more than one occasion, just in the episodes we've recorded so far of this show, about what a pain in the butt strawberries are
Oh
to
my gosh,
ferment.
yeah. This could change everything.
What if, what if we get, let's take a traditional mead and make the 77%, and then fortify a young strawberry mead and see if we can get strawberry fruit flavor to stick.
That would be cool. That would be cool.
It may or may not work, but
We got to lose by trying.
exactly. This is the place where, you know, if anybody is going to try it and if anybody's going to do something a little silly to see what happens, why not
Why
us,
not
right?
us? Yeah, I'm so serious. But no, but it was actually a fascinating dive into both port and fortified wines for me. The fortified wines was actually, for me, was kind of amazing to see. I mean,
So outside of port, what kind of other fortified wines are we? What other notes? What can you tell me about
other for fortification, not a lot. I mean, until I start doing it, I
them?
haven't got a lot of information about that.
Sure.
I do know that the sweetness, okay, they made a sweet mead, and they said they could taste this. The term they used was that I could taste the honey weaving through the other flavors of the of what they made, which is an interesting taste experiment for me because it wasn't pronounced, it wasn't absent, it was integrated, and that was freshly fortified.
Well, and it occurs to me that, you know, in this idea of fortifying mead, in the process of making the product that we're adding to the newly started mead, or even just adding to a finished mead for fortification purposes, how much of that honey flavor remains in the distillate? You know,
I mean, I can't imagine much is going to be there simply because it's 77%. That's going to be pretty dry.
That's going to be dry as all get out. Plus, you know, we talk about the all of the volatile aromas in honey are very the volatile, for lack of a better term. And many of them are temperature sensitive. So if you go above, you know, as some people say as low as 95 degrees, some people will give it a little bit more headroom and say 110. But if you go above a certain temperature, you start off-gassing some of those flavors. And obviously, we're talking about distilling alcohol, which is done at a boil. So,
Where's it all going?
right.
Yeah, like uncharted territory, man. But I would love to try it even with the whiskey, the rums, the brandies, all that, just to see what we get out of it. I mean, I in the 6 odd years that I've done this, 6, 7 years I've done this, I've come to the point where I'm more about the taste. I am more. I mean, the fun of I can make an alcoholic beverage. This is so cool. Is gone. That I want better tasting words.
You know, when I was fairly early in my career, I ran into somebody else at a Renaissance fair, and I forget how the topic came up, but somebody was like, "Oh, you make mead? Jeff, this guy makes mead." And we got to talking, and not shaming anybody on their process, but we got to talking for about 5 minutes, and it became very clear that, you know, I was looking for a nice flavored mead or an interesting, you know, mead flavor experience. And this guy was like, "I got alcohol up to 18% one time. Okay, but
That
how did
wasn't
it
me.
taste?"
Yeah, I mean, I've always been interested in the flavor. I was just trying to see how far I could push it. And this is a different direction. So, but the fortified mead is just, there are so many ways it can go right and wrong. It's amazing.
I'm sure, yeah.
I want to see, I wouldn't mind having a 20, 25% mead, but I'm more about the taste.
Right. It has to taste good even at that high ABV.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked before about like the idea of something that's a little higher in alcohol, you have a small little sniffer of it or something on a winter's eve or whatever. I think this could be easily in that same, you like a port you would buy.
Yeah, like a port. But anyway, but that's all I really came in with today for this.
Okay.
Not a huge amount of information, but I don't have so long. I don't have so long.
We are now expanding the list of stuff that we want to chew on with this.
Sometime in the future, I'd like to talk to you about, things we can do to expand on what we can give out there. So we'll talk about that.
Right, yeah, we'll do a little bit of chewing on this and kind of long-term planning and teasing as far as maybe more recipes and more reports of our homebrew stuff are forthcoming here.
But by the same token, guys, if you got something you want us to try, or you have tried, especially if you have tried, because Tracy, when she first said she would help me get better meads, told me, I want you to make a better mead than I've made. Tall order. She's got a wall of awards and two more recently at Valkyrie. And she goes, I want you to make a better mead than I made so I can make a better mead than you made so we can keep trading that off. And that's kind of a goal here, guys, because with the community, it can only go up.
The rising tide raises all ships.
Yes, exactly. Bingo, right there.
And so, Chris, we've talked a little bit about fortified meads and adding like spirits to meads to get flavors. It occurs to me, we can kind of buttress this with a similar idea. What if we've got a finished mead and we want to make a little something fun with it, like a cocktail?
A cocktail meat, actually, it's a thing. And because I ran into this stuff online, that term came up. Mead cocktails came up,
Sure.
and I just thought, now making a cocktail is simply taking an alcoholic beverage and adding other stuff to it, even other alcoholic beverages, to get a flavor.
Right,
If
right.
you've gone to a bar and gotten a Almond Joy or whatever this or Dr. Pepper shot, whatever they are,
Right, the lemon drop or the Singapore Sling or what?
whatever they are.
Yeah.
Mead is starting to go into that field too,
Sure, okay.
as an ingredient. And I pulled up a few things, like they have the Mead Mule, the
Okay.
variation of the Moscow Mule.
Okay.
Mead, vodka, lime juice, ginger beer, ice with a lime for garnish.
Okay.
Just like the Moscow Mule, but instead, but you have mead in there too.
Well, and you look at that, and that's a fairly a basic mead. If you think about like a cocktail, that basic mead is giving you some of the sweetness and some of the alcohol content. It's not like obviously doing all of the alcohol because
Vodka.
once you delete it with the or once you delete it once you dilute it with the
Good mead.
it is good mead. Thank you, Kyle. Once you dilute it with some lime juice and ginger beer and stuff like that, your 12% ABV mead is going to be like a 3% cocktail, which probably great for us for this point because we could finish talking about all this stuff, but
Yeah.
probably not what you want when you go to a cocktail bar.
Probably not.
So, but by the same token, like we're talking about a mead, and think about all the fun stuff you could do with a different flavor of mead. Like throw some a ginger flavor of mead in there, and you've got a little higher on the,
And it works for all of them.
Oh yeah.
I found things for raspberry meads to be put in there. I found things for lemon meads to be put in there. Maybe for like a lemon drop or something like it or something like that. I mean, there's, as many kinds of mead as you can make, there's a cocktail you can make with it.
I'm sure, and I'm sure this is like another. We could go on an entire whole like research and deep dive on our own as far as, hey, I have this bottle of this mead I made, and this bottle that you left over here that you made, and I mixed with 2 ounces of tonic water and 3 ounces of mead and a couple dashes of bitters or something like that, and turned out pretty good, man.
Yeah. And it completely, ever since I've started doing this with you, I found out that I knew from day one mead is a huge endeavor, rabbit hole, horizon beating, submission forming endeavor. Dude, it's gotten so much bigger than I thought.
Well, and without looking at all of the different recipes that you found here in your research, I'm just kind of thinking things through as far as like what I know about cocktails. I'm no expert on this by
I've
any
actually
stretch of
gone
the
through a
imagination.
mixology course,
Okay.
and building a cocktail is it's the same way of making a mead.
Sure.
You're looking for a flavor, and you're looking how to get close as you can to that flavor without hurting yourself.
Sure.
And it's the same thing.
My knowledge of making a cocktail is basically there's a spirit. There's generally like another flavoring thing. Like let's say, we're talking about a martini, the basicest of basic spirits. Everybody knows what martini is. You've got vodka or gin. You've got like a vermouth, which is like a,
Excellent.
it's a wine kind of a thing, but it's an
It's
aperitif-y kind of.
spiced. It's a spiced wine.
Yes.
It's a spiced wine.
Right.
And it's really pretty dry.
Sometimes they're sweet. It's an entirely different animal when it's sweet, but we're, in the case of a martini, we're talking about a dry vermouth. And then
And the more you
usually,
add, the more dry your martini is.
right, usually then you also have a garnish with some like little cocktail olives, maybe a little of the olive brine, but that's basically it. In terms of cocktails with mead, I'm kind of seeing mead as maybe the vermouth side of this, where it's the flavor and the sweetness, but not necessarily the alcohol volume. Or it could also be part of, like in sweeter cocktails, part of that simple syrup or the muddled like sugar cube or whatever they're adding for the sweetness part of it. You could play into that as well, so that you're not using as much sugar per se if you're getting a sweeter mead in there.
And also, this is the meads I would use would be like the clover meads, where it's very light to begin with, because if you want the mead to take forefront, get a stronger mead. Fine, see the
Sure,
point. But if you want to
fine.
make a cocktail, a lighter mead could do you just as well and make you more versatile.
Realistically, yeah, no, I think if you're just working with a lighter mead, the using it in place of simple syrup, you could go a long way with that, and you get extra honey notes to it, a little bit of extra alcohol that's, I mean, maybe cut back on your base spirit, but you got to be responsible. Everybody's got to, you don't want to go throw up in
I mean,
that,
dude,
but
I live in America. Where do you live again?
sorry.
Okay, yeah, to make it less. We don't do that.
Sorry, I thought we were in the Midwest. I didn't realize we were in Texas, where everything's bigger, including the ABV and apparently our bloated livers.
Torch that liver till it screams, seriously. But using, I mean, I want as a flavoring, yes.
Yeah, that's
But w imagine making the aforementioned mead mule with a buckwheat honey mead.
yeah.
There's a whole level of what the heck am I drinking now?
Exactly. And you know, a buckwheat honey mead, especially if you use like the Eastern buckwheat, that's kind of like that little barnyardy, little funky. It works in the right context, but it's not always pleasant. But you add that to the lime juice and the ginger and the, you know, the vodka, you water it down a little bit, so it's a kind of a secondary or maybe even an ancillary flavor to that whole cocktail. I could see that working
Yeah,
really
me
well.
too. I mean, that's why
Yeah.
I brought that particular meat up.
Yeah.
But yeah, but wow. I mean, I actually didn't think we'd get into the mixology range of cocktail meads, but not say I'm mad about it, because
No.
this is awesome.
I mean, it's if there's one, if you get another batch of mead that is not perfect, but it's okay, it's pretty good. You may have other uses for it other than drinking it alone in your own shame.
Yes,
Which
that would be
I've been
awesome.
known to do,
Yeah, well,
so.
guilty, guilty. That freaking banana meat. That
Freaking banana
freaking
meat.
banana meat. Oh my gosh. And the strawberry was saved with chocolate and a little more strawberry, but the banana, the only thing that was saving it was a lot of chocolate.
Well, what can we do with a subpar banana mead in a
Daiquiri.
cocktail? There you go.
Daiquiri.
I could see.
First one on the board.
You know, I don't know how you make a daiquiri, but when I make a daiquiri, there's a lot of rum involved, which probably helps everything. I like to use like a demerara or like an unprocessed sugar. It's a little bit grittier, and then mix it with the rum, get the lime juice in there, and
The banana liqueur.
yeah.
And that's what you're replacing with the mead right there, the banana liqueur.
Maybe use a little less sugar because it's probably going to be sweet. I don't. It's one of your meats. It's
No,
definitely going to be sweet.
well, my banana mead is actually now a chocolate banana. It'd still work though.
Yes.
It would still work for that daiquiri, a chocolate banana daiquiri.
I think it would. That's two more flavors that we're adding on top of, you know, just something I like really well.
But there you go.
Yeah.
I have worked out my I went through mixology way before I met you or my wife, so I'd have to pull out a lot of information that's been stored back in cobwebs for a while, but we can go there.
Yeah.
I actually want to do this on the right now for you, because you just reminded me. I talked to my daughter.
Okay.
My daughter's a trained chef.
Yes.
She has agreed to help us make a mead book. mead cookbook. She
Nice.
said, "I can't do a lot right now. I'm doing school stuff,
Yeah.
but she will point us in the right direction and help where she can."
Okay. So, mead recipes in the future. You heard it here first, guys. So stay tuned for that. Stay tuned for more exciting news. And this is, we've got between fortified meads and cocktail meads, we have got all kinds of strange and interesting little directions that we're adding to an already overburdened list for each of us.
Oh my gosh, yes.
So,
I've
yeah.
actually had people, write to me say, "Hey, have you tried this kind of meat?" "No." "Would you?" "Sure." I'm not mad.
I mean, there are way worse problems to have in this day and age,
Yeah, there is, but holy, I'm like, "Hey, have you tried raspberry lemonade meat?" "Well, I am now."
Hey, have you tried? Maybe we should cut this episode short before it gets any worse for us.
Oh my gosh. Jeff, have a great day. Thank you for your time.
Chris, always a pleasure.
Take care, everybody out there. Happy meeting.
Yes.